Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York Governor Kathy Hochul. Governor, welcome back to the Capital Connection. It's always such a pleasure to have our chief executive with us.
Alan, it's great to be back on the show. It's been too long, but we're ready to talk and answer any of your questions.
Well, I guess the first question is, in your recent budget proposal, you've allocated $25 billion, that's with a B, for affordable housing, including a 10-year plan to build 800,000 new homes to address the state's housing shortage. Can you tell us more about how your plan goes and how you make this a reality?
Alan, this is a matter of survival for the state of New York. The good news is that we have a lot of jobs. Businesses want to come. People want to live here. But if they can't find housing to meet their needs, whether it's that first starter apartment for a young person or affordable housing for someone who needs a little extra help, workforce housing, or someone market rate or luxury housing, if we don't meet that demand, then we will not be able to achieve our full potential, because it's a complete reversal of when I was growing up in industrial upstate New York. Plenty of houses, low-cost housing, no jobs. And now the opposite is true, but we have to meet the demand, which is very high. And that's why our plan is bold. It's aggressive, but I will never just be looking for the easy answers and the easy path to success. This is going to be challenging, but failure is not going to be an option. We have to be successful in meeting the demand of New Yorkers who want to live here.
Well, it's bold, all right. So tell us a little bit more in the details.
Well, we're talking about, first of all, setting goals and asking communities from downstate to upstate to, depending on where they are located, to meet certain objectives. For example, upstate, we're asking communities to simply increase their housing stock by 1% over the next 3 years. They can do that countless ways. They can, you know, rezone land that's an old industrial site, a former mall that's now vacant, an old warehouse, or a parking lot that's not being utilized to put in, you know, whatever kind of housing they want. But downstate, we're asking there to be a 3% threshold. That's places like Long Island and Westchester and New York City, that they can meet 3%. And communities that have the luxury, and I call it a luxury, of having a train station in their community, which really increases their property values, increases the connectivity to good-paying jobs. We really want to see what they call transit-oriented development, which is putting housing right next to the station so people don't even need to have a car. They can commute to their jobs, and to have many cases just have empty parking lots adjacent to train stations no longer makes sense. So we're asking people to meet these goals, and we're here to help. I know that when you put in new housing, there's associated a cost. I was a town board member for 14 years. So we put $250 million to help the communities with roads and sewers and schools and the other expenses they would incur by meeting these this demand. But I think it's beneficial for all these communities to grow. So young people who grow up and want to raise their families near the grandparents, you know, they don't have to say goodbye to their kids to another neighboring state where there's more plentiful supply, because we have not kept up with Boston, Connecticut, New Jersey, anywhere else in Massachusetts. We are so far behind in building housing stock that is really to our detriment, and we're starting to see the effects of it now without migration.
We are talking to our friend, I hope, Governor Kathy Hochul. Is there any tension between you and the Senate Democratic leadership, specifically Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins?
No, we sat down together for well over an hour, I think almost going on 2 hours, to talk about our mutual priorities, you know, what the Senate hopes to accomplish, what the Speaker also hopes to accomplish, what my goals are. And so I think it's very clear, and we've seen each other at many events. It's, you know, I would say it's very friendly. So I'm very able to compartmentalize different issues. I've been in this business a long time. I've had to work with people throughout life who've not necessarily agreed with me on every issue, but there's other issues where you find common interest. So that's really what I think. I'm certain that New Yorkers want to occur, not to have us driven into our respective corners with our gloves up and ready to fight. They want us to get the job done for them. They don't care about all these distractions. I mean, it's important to me to select the chief judge. I have selected an individual. His name is still out there. The Senate can vote on him anytime they want. But that doesn't detract from my ability to, as I did this morning, I hosted a breakfast for all the new members of the Assembly and Senate. They shared their priorities. We talked about my objectives, and we all agreed we're going to work together. So that's how I'm changing the culture here in Albany, that despite some of the disagreements, and some of them are very serious disagreements, that we can still work together on other issues. And that's how I've changed people's attitudes about their state government.
So you're the governor, you're a woman, and Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins is a woman. Do you think this marks a change in the way our politics are run in New York State?
With having two women in leadership positions, absolutely. You know, we joke about how, you know, when Leader Stewart-Cousins was there, was always, you know, she was rising up before she ascended to her position. It was three men in a room, and then it was two men and a woman, and now it's two women and a man. And Speaker Heastie's a good sport about it, but it is a sign that change has finally arrived, and that we have more representation from women, and representative communities of color, and that's one of the reasons I thought Hector LaSalle was also an important individual to put in a high position, because he has an exceptional record, but also letting people from the Hispanic community know that. They finally broke one of their barriers as well in the judiciary. So I believe in supporting individuals, the best qualified, number one, but also increasing diversity. And I have the most diverse administration, powered by many women and a lot of smart men as well, and really trying to just make my administration, my cabinet, really, truly reflect what New York looks like and where we come from.
Are you getting any pushback on your push for diversity? Is anybody saying, I wish you hadn't done that?
Oh, I'm sure they think that, Alan. I mean, everybody has their own opinions, but you can't argue with the caliber of the individuals I've selected for every position, from cabinet to my senior team. I set it forth to assemble the best and the brightest from all walks of life and bring different perspectives. And I'm the beneficiary of that. When I reach out to my team and my cabinet to offer their perspectives and, for example, come up with over 200 policy recommendations that are in our budget and my state of the state and the budget that's going to really be transformative, just building on what we started last year. So, people may criticize. Alan, I'm in a business where you get criticized when you wake up in the morning, you go to bed. That's all right. Criticism has no effect on me. I think people are starting to realize that I have the thick skin required for this job, and, it's been cultivated over many, many years, and certainly you get battle-tested in tough campaigns. And, so criticism, I always subscribe to Teddy Roosevelt's Man in the Arena speech, which I've now have in my office. It changed a little bit. I hope he's okay. It says woman in the arena, and it talks about how there's always going to be critics on the sidelines, those who are the faint of heart, who, despite the fact that there's others in the arena fighting, they're always throwing their stones and casting dispersions. So you raise criticism, Alan, it has zero effect on me.
Interesting. You're a much better person than I am. Criticism has terrible effect on me.
Criticize you, Alan. I promise I won't.
And what about the constant criticism, as long as we're using that word, around bail reform in New York? You signal in your State of the State address that you want to give judges more discretion in setting bail, but many progressive Democrats don't want to tweak the law. Is that a tough negotiation? Can you let us all in on it?
Sure. I mean, everything's tough in this business, Alan. The easy work has already been done. What I'm focused on is making sure that New Yorkers, who overwhelmingly expect their leaders in Albany to take public safety seriously, to make sure that we find every way we can to, you know, support law enforcement and keeping our streets safe, but also making sure that we never compromise individual rights. So I've said in my State of State address very clearly, I support the underlying premise, the fundamentals of bail reform. While we could not have a true system of justice if two individuals accused of the same offense, low-level offense, have different outcomes based on whether or not they have enough money in their bank account or their parents have enough money to bail them out of jail. Mm-hmm. So we ended that. I support that. But what I'm simply saying now is that there's an inconsistency in the law as written right now when it comes to what judges are supposed to do. Part of the law says that you can consider factors. Was a gun involved? Was harm done to individuals? Did they violate an order of protection? Repeat offenders? You know, for serious crimes, serious and violent crimes, and repeat offenders for these serious crimes, I believe that those are the factors that should be considered. It makes sense. But also at the same time, our law also has a provision that says the judge has to look at and consider what is the least restrictive means of ensuring someone appears for their court appearance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So here's a judge sitting there like, well, I'm looking at all these factors on the one side of the column, and yes, you can check the box on a few, but what am I supposed to do with this other factor that I'm required to apply that says something totally different? So what we have is judges applying different standards to the same set of circumstances depending on their own judgment, their own philosophies, and in different parts of the state we're seeing different outcomes. All I want to do, Alan, is clean that up. Crystal clear, we're not reopening everything else. You know, we're investing in law enforcement, investing in communities so they can protect themselves. But all I want to do is take this one element off the table, fix this one part, and then go forth and let everybody know, you know, this is it. We've accomplished what we need to do with respect to bail reform, and we can look at other factors to make sure that we can reduce crime, like getting illegal guns off the streets, which is a high, high priority of our administration.
We are talking with Governor Kathy Hochul. We're very pleased to be doing that. Governor, I am so delighted that you're here, that you are, of course, a woman. Has that changed perspective for you or for those around you on what's possible for women in state politics?
I believe so, Alan, and it's not from me. It's from what I'm hearing from so many women, but also fathers who want their daughters to shake my hand and get a picture taken and say, you know, look, sweetheart, this is a woman governor. That means you can be anything you want to be. So, yes, we have broken through barriers that have been in place a very long time. We're celebrating Susan B. Anthony's birthday and actually Frederick Douglass's birthday. So I was in Rochester where both of them had lived. And so it was it's a celebration week in Rochester. But it really, you know, for me personally, I've always known I could do this if necessary. That's the job of a lieutenant governor. I was prepared to step in. But other people had not seen the model of someone doing it. You know, we only have a few women in governing states in our entire history, and you know, only 12 now, which is a record high. But my objective, Alan, is when we're all done with this, you know, whenever my terms end, that people will look back and realize that a woman can do this job, that it doesn't require a certain personality, that you can have different individuals in here who approach things differently, whether it's collaboratively or showing the toughness when required. And in that sense, you know, I've been called an iron fist and a velvet glove. I'll take that any day of the week. You want me to keep the glove on is what some of the past have said. So what I have to do is demonstrate that women can handle this job, that we have what it takes, that we bring the heart and the strength to make sure that we, you know, serve the people of the state of New York. And that's what this is all about.
You know, Governor, my PhD is in politics and mental health. And mental health is in your budget, also commits $1 billion for mental health care. Can it be done?
We have to. Alan, we have ignored this mental health crisis for so long. You know, the stigma around it, people not wanting to admit that they need assistance, whether they're a military veteran returning from two tours of duty in Afghanistan and Iraq, who've really suffered a great deal. There's always been a stigma around seeking help. And even our young kids in school who had to endure so much during the pandemic, and there was not a lifeline for them. And so you look at the number of teenagers suffering from depression and having suicidal thoughts,
yeah.
People who are turning to substance abuse to be, you know, self-medicate, really, to help deal with the stress of everyday life. So we've got all the whole spectrum of individuals affected, and that's why we have to invest the money for a continuum of care. We're not just talking about people who are severely mentally ill, who can't take care of themselves, who may be homeless, living on our streets. They are a top priority, and we have to meet them where they are and help them get into supportive housing after getting treatment. But even in our schools, my view is that every single school should have a mental health professional to help the teachers who are struggling so hard to help these kids move ahead and move out of what they're experiencing. So our budget, which has $34.5 billion, an historic amount of money for education, we're telling schools you really need to dedicate part of this to hiring individuals who can help the students, because the time we invest in mental health of children now is time we won't have to later when they're an adult and the consequences are more serious. So it's about adding beds. It's about adding housing units. It's about expanding services in our schools, and that's exactly what we're going to do in our budget.
So, Kathy Hochul, when you get up in the morning and you scratch your head and you say, hey, I'm governor, is that extraordinary that you could say that to yourself? I mean, not everybody can.
You know, I was just at dinner with my husband. I don't see him as often as I like to, but I wanted to reconnect right before Valentine's Day. We've been together since we were interns for the New York State Assembly. And, you know, we joked a little bit about, you know, can you believe this? You know, that my family came from a trailer park in Lackawanna. His parents, you know, his father worked multiple jobs. His mom did. They lived really on the edge. They had to use food stamps at one point when his father couldn't work because of illness. And so, you know, we came out of two families that struggled. And we both went to public high schools and had the benefit of a good college degree, and that set us in a different place. So I think more than just being, you know, sort of in awe of the fact that I'm the governor, which is, a you know, something I cherish and I really am proud to be governor, I also know that this position allows me to help unlock opportunities for people who grew up in circumstances like my own and others who are in far worse circumstances. So that's what I love about this job, is every day I can wake up and focus on the priorities of what we need to get done in this budget. But even going to communities that are, you know, the small towns and unleashing their potential with money for their downtowns. We went, you know, Perry and Geneseo and Medina. We offered them money yesterday. That we met the mayors. It's like they just won the Oscars. They're so excited. And coming out of local government and small towns, I have an appreciation for that. But I'm not intimidated by the big cities either. I've spent so much time in New York and our larger cities upstate. So I'm really comfortable wherever I go. So being governor made me more to, you know, others in terms of the title, but for me it's a position to exercise tremendous influence on the quality of life for people, trying to make this place more affordable, more livable, safer. Those are my values, and that's why, you know, I'm where I wanted to be. I'm here for a reason, a purpose that I have to live up to every single day.
As you know, Governor Hochul, I have over the years talked to a lot of governors. For years and years, I talked to Mario Cuomo and then to Andrew Cuomo and to all the others. You are in quite a pantheon. Do you think about that?
Well, I go even further back when I think about the legacy. I live in the home, the governor's residence that Roosevelt once lived in, and Al Smith lived in, and FDR lived in, and many of the early greats. And so I have their books and their pictures on the wall. And it's a reminder of a place that's not just steeped in history, but also successful individuals who moved this state forward while they were governors. And that's the legacy that I have to live up to. I'm conscious of that every single day, that when people look back at my time, I want it to be more than Kathy Hochul was the first female governor of New York. It has to be Kathy Hochul was a governor who did this, and she made these changes, and she changed the culture, and she was able to get people to believe in their government again as a place that actually looked out for them and had their backs and didn't forget the working men and women of the state who didn't get caught up in all kinds of culture wars and battles that aren't directly aligned with where people are right now. So I'm working hard to restore that faith every day through where I go, the speeches I deliver, the stories I tell, but also the policies that we're delivering last year and again this year through the budget. So I'm very conscious of the historical significance of this, but also knowing that we're judged by our legacies as soon as you leave office and then for generations to come.
It's always wonderful to be talking to our friend, Governor Kathy Hochul, governor of New York State. Kathy Hochul, what about the Environmental Bond Act? Can you tell us more specifically about what that money that we've borrowed will pay for?
Yes, and this is something I'm really proud of. I was governor literally just for about a month or two last year, August 2021. And literally a month later, I decided we have to go bigger on the Bond Act. We should put more behind it instead of being a $3 billion Bond Act, because I saw what was happening. There was so much demand for building resiliency and helping us transition to renewable energy. So many costs associated with what is really like the Industrial Revolution. I mean, we're going to have major, major disruptions and changes out of necessity to protect our environment. So we put $4.2 billion in the Bond Act. Voters overwhelmingly supported this in the November election on the ballot. Very excited about that. So literally April 1st, we start issuing the first bonds for the fiscal year. I have an interagency working group to begin identifying all the needs for environmental funding across the state. They started a website last week, and so we start a public comment period. But a lot of it has to do with the things you don't see. But when they fail, you're very conscious of it, whether it's the sewers and aging water infrastructure, water quality. There's places in our state where it's still not what it should be. Reducing air pollution, you know, storing habitats, outdoor spaces, equity by investing in disadvantaged communities. And the other good news, Alan, I can't wait to create the tens of thousands of good-paying green jobs and making sure that young people who don't think they have hope and opportunities lying ahead of them, we can pull them into these training programs, whether it's apprenticeship programs or community colleges, and get them the certificates and the education they need so they can step up and be part of a whole new economy. So, you know, we know the breakdown of the funding for open space and, you know, flood risk mitigation and climate change mitigation, but it is a holistic approach to looking at every area where we can use this money in a way that, again, generationally, people will think about what we did at this time to protect Mother Nature, to protect our environment, and also just change our whole economy around what has to happen, and that is protecting the environment. So this is a huge opportunity, and I believe this is one that's going to be talked about as a model for other states as well.
In 2 minutes, I wanted to ask you, how's the cannabis rollout been going? And do you smoke?
No, I don't. I have to say, despite going to school in the 70s, it's nothing I ever partook in. But I'm not done living yet, so you never know, Alan. You never know.
Me neither, on both counts. And I must say, there are those who would look down their nose at me for not having smoked pot. But, you know, each of us make our personal choices. You did and I did, right?
You can say that you and the governor have that in common as well. You know, it's free will. You know, we want to just make sure that we protect our kids and we do things in a smart way. You know, we're basically standing up a whole new industry.
Sure.
And other states have gone ahead. So it's one of those areas where we played a little bit of catch up, but we also had the luxury of looking at the successes and failures of other states to make sure that we have a social equity plan that's really the cornerstone of our early initiatives. That we're making sure that communities that have been, young people have been incarcerated, you know, the over-prosecution of young people for just possession of marijuana, and in other communities that was not going on. So there was a huge disparity that we're trying to correct now, but we actually are opening up the dispensaries, our third one in Manhattan just opened. But the challenge, Alan, is we've got a lawsuit. I don't know if people are aware of this, that a lawsuit was brought by a Michigan business and he wanted to be on our list of dispensary licenses. Well, we wanted to make sure they went to New York residents, right? Makes sense. So we're in litigation, and because of that, there are entire parts of our state where we can't move forward with our plan, some of the boroughs and communities upstate. So that's why we've got a challenge right now. We have to get through this litigation, but while we are working on that, we're allowing to stand up dispensaries in other parts of the state. So it is moving ahead. It had been on a slow track before I became governor. And early on in my administration, I said, listen, this is the law. New Yorkers want this to happen. It's a whole new industry, create thousands of jobs, but also help our farmers. Because I know upstate very well. I know how our farmers are struggling. And to give them a whole new source of income is really important to me as well. So we move things quickly. And again, nothing ever happens as fast as I want to. But we are pushing ahead. And again, we'll have to deal with the litigation, which is slowing us down in certain parts of the state.
You get the last word, Governor Kathy Hochul. And may I just say that we are very proud when you come on and you talk to us. We have a long history of talking to governors on this show. And you have done so well. And thanks again for joining us.
All right. Thank you, Alan. Always good to be on this show and have a chance to catch up with you as well. So thank you very much.
Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262 or visit us online anytime at WAMC.org or just schedule a podcast anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. Thanks for listening.